Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Katie Weaver and Anna Mateo. Later, we will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, India's Hindu nationalist government has moved to take away the special status that the territory of Kashmir has held for many years. Home Minister Amit Shah told Parliament Monday that the president had signed an order canceling Article 370 of the Indian Constitution. Article 370 permitted Kashmir to have self-rule in all issues except foreign affairs, defense, and communications. The new law also removes rules that barred Indians from moving to the area, buying land, and holding local government jobs. The law still needs the approval of the Indian Parliament. Last week, India deployed 10,000 additional troops to Kashmir to maintain security as the announcement neared. Pakistan's foreign ministry said in a statement that it strongly condemns India's actions towards the internationally recognized disputed territory. Kashmir is divided between India and Pakistan, but both countries claim the whole territory. It has been the cause of two of the three wars between the countries. The statement from the Pakistan Foreign Ministry also said that the government of India does not have the right to change the status of Kashmir. The dispute over the territory was mediated by the United Nations. Pakistan will exercise all possible options, it said. Shah's announcement was also met with large protests from opposition parties in India's parliament. They called the new law unconstitutional.
Somaya was 13 years old and a seventh grade student in Herat, Afghanistan, when her father sold her into marriage. He received $3,300 for agreeing to let her marry the son of a relative. The young bride moved into her husband's family home. Somaya says her father then spent much of the $3,300 on bedding for her home, clothing, and jewelry. When Somaya asked if she could continue her education, she says both her husband and mother-in-law beat her. "I kept telling them that I wanted to go to school," Somaya said, "but my in-laws told me, 'If you go to school, who will do the house chores? We bought you.'" About 650 million children and women alive today were married before age 18. That is about 17% of the world's female population, reports the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF. In a year-long project, Voice of America met with child brides from Albania to Pakistan to Tanzania. They put faces and voices on a practice that the United Nations is trying to end by 2030. Ending child marriage is critical to improving worldwide health, ending poverty, and expanding human rights, UNICEF says. Teenage brides are often physically abused, and their lives of housework and childbearing keep widespread gender inequality very much alive in their communities. The World Health Organization reports the leading cause of death for females ages 15 to 19 are problems linked to pregnancy and giving birth. Babies born to girls younger than 18 also have higher risks of death and poor development. In 2017, UNICEF listed the countries with the highest rates of child marriage before age 18. The top five were Niger, Central African Republic, Chad, Bangladesh, and Mali. The term child marriage is defined as official marriages and unofficial unions, in which a girl or boy under age 18 lives with a partner as if married. Early marriage does not happen in only one area or in one religion. For example, the U.S. state of Missouri recently raised the lowest lawful age for marriage to 16. People from neighboring states had long crossed into Missouri to get married, often because the girl was pregnant. Sometimes the fathers feared charges of statutory rape in their home state. Girls Not Brides is a London-based partnership of more than 1,000 organizations working to end child marriage. It reports that in Nigeria, the Islamic militant group Boko Haram gives some members wives in payment for fighting. In the country's north, 65% of girls are married before they turn 18. On the Indonesian island of Lombok, a girl who is not married by 16 is said to be a source of shame to her family. Lakshmi Sundaram led Girls Not Brides from 2012 until earlier this year. She said, "Many people mistakenly think child marriage is restricted to a few small villages around the world. It's happening everywhere," she said. "It may look a bit different in different places, but it is a universal issue." Yet more than 12 million girls get married by age 18 every year, UNICEF reports. They are often forced into such unions. This mainly affects girls from poor and rural areas, where child marriage is an ingrained cultural practice that some people see as protecting women who have few choices. VOA reporters around the world explored the worth of a girl. They looked at how a young bride is valued by two families, the one she leaves behind and the one she joins, and the cost to the girl herself of marriage before adulthood. Over the next several days, VOA Learning English will present some of the powerful stories of girls and women from all over the world. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Alcoholic products, whether beer, wine, or spirits, are sold almost everywhere around the world. Drinking alcohol is a part of daily life and considered socially acceptable in many, if not most, cultures. However, some health experts warn that alcohol is a poison and can be bad for you. In 2018, the World Health Organization reported that alcohol kills about 3 million people worldwide each year. And the U.S. National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence has called alcohol the most regularly used addictive substance. In 2016, people in the United States alone spent more than $220 billion on alcohol. That number comes from alcohol.org, a website operated by Recovery Brands. It is part of American Addiction Centers, which provides addiction treatment services. The makers of alcoholic drinks spend billions of dollars a year on advertising. The alcohol industry also spends millions of dollars on health studies, and that has led to a controversy.
A federal health agency in the United States canceled a study about alcohol's effects on the human heart. It acted after three U.S. publications noted a possible conflict of interest because of financing for the study. The New York Times, Stat, and Wired reported that the alcohol industry gave millions of dollars to the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism for the study. They claimed that the industry provided $67 million of the $100 million needed. The NIAAA leads government efforts to reduce alcohol-related problems. The agency is part of the U.S. National Institutes of Health, or NIH.
In a statement, NIH Director Francis Collins said his agency plans to end funding to the Moderate Alcohol and Cardiovascular Health Trial. It also said the agency was concerned that the study was poorly designed. The NIH noted the narrowness of the study. As its name suggests, the study was to investigate alcohol's effects on the heart. NIH officials noted concerns that other health conditions, such as cancer, were not considered in connection with moderate alcohol use. In addition to the design of the study, the NIH press statement expressed concern about the funding process. Investigations by the media found that NIAAA officials had asked the alcohol industry to provide money for the study. This may have violated NIH policies, something the government agency is investigating. The agency said that all of these irregularities damaged the integrity of the research.
Reporters from STAT used a Freedom of Information Act request to examine emails to and from the NIAAA's director, George Koob. They found that in one email, Koob wrote to an employee of an alcohol trade organization. In it, he promised good results for the alcohol industry from the now canceled study. That man was Samir Zakari of the Distilled Spirits Council. This trade organization represents alcohol companies. It often works very closely with government regulators and researchers. Zakari is a former director at the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. After retiring from the government job, he went to work for the Distilled Spirits Council.
Dr. David Jernigan directs the Center on Alcohol Marketing and Youth at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He warns about the influence the alcohol industry has on public health research and policy. Jernigan says laws dealing with alcohol production, sales, and use have eased thanks to efforts by alcohol manufacturers. He adds that public health messages about alcohol often cannot compete with information from the alcohol industry.
Any health messaging about alcohol is completely overwhelmed by conservatively $3.5 to $4 billion in the U.S. alone of alcohol marketing. There's just so much marketing for alcohol out there, health messages can't keep up.
Take cancer, for example. Many people do not know there is a link between alcohol and cancer.
Since 2012, the WHO has recognized alcoholic products as a Group 1 carcinogen. WHO researchers explain that drinking alcohol can cause at least 7 kinds of cancer: bowel, breast, esophagus, larynx, liver, mouth, and upper throat. However, health experts at the WHO find that many people have not heard about the link between alcohol and cancer. They say it is important to tell people that alcohol is a carcinogen and has been shown to increase one's risk of cancer.
Some researchers are slow to claim a link between cancer and alcohol. Dr. Jernigan is not one of them. He talks about one cancer in particular, breast cancer. Women are especially at risk because of the way alcohol reacts with the female sex hormone, estrogen.
Breast cancer is one of those alcohol-related consequences that many people are simply unaware of. In the U.S., 15% of cases of female breast cancer are considered caused by alcohol use, and a third of these cases occur at consumption of less than a drink and a half a day.
The WHO has called on countries to enact effective measures to reduce the overall use of alcohol. These measures usually involve what Dr. Jernigan calls the three A's: attractiveness, affordability, and availability. He says research shows that taking steps to deal with these three A's can cut down on alcohol problems.
There is a large body of research that shows that if you deal with the attractiveness by restricting the marketing, if you deal with the affordability by dealing with price and increasing alcohol taxes regularly, and if you deal with the physical availability, you can reduce alcohol problems. It's not rocket science, and there's a lot of science behind it.
However, he claims that U.S. health agencies with ties to the alcohol industry are not supporting those studies.
So the larger point here is we know what needs to happen. What's missing is political will. These are all things that require leadership, political leadership, in order to make them happen.
And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
On our national parks journey, we head to southern Florida. Here, you will find blue-green seas, marine wildlife, and islands that hold thousands of years of human history. Welcome to Biscayne National Park. Biscayne is not very far from the lights, noise, and excitement of downtown Miami. But it has a very different atmosphere from the big city. Biscayne National Park was established as a national monument in 1968. It became a national park in 1980. That year, its size also increased. The park now covers more than 70,000 hectares. It includes the northern part of the world-famous Florida Keys. Keys are low-lying islands or reefs.
If you enjoy water, Biscayne is the park for you. 95% of the park is water. Many kinds of animals live within the park. Some of them are threatened or endangered. You will find the huge, gentle West Indian manatee, the less gentle American crocodile, several kinds of sea turtles, and more than 500 species of fish. Four ecosystems come together here, which is what makes the park so diverse. The blending ecosystems create what is called edge communities. These edge communities support a huge array of wildlife. The underwater diversity is what attracts most people to Biscayne National Park. Many visitors come here to snorkel or scuba dive in Biscayne's clear and warm waters.
Human history at Biscayne begins more than 10,000 years ago. Scientists say evidence of the area's earliest people is mostly underwater now, as water levels have risen over time. Within the last 3,000 years, people began to settle in the area. Scientists continue to learn about these people by examining the big hills of shells they left behind. The shells contain other waste, too, including early tools and housewares. As the population grew, it divided into separate cultures. The groups began making pottery and created trade networks. These Native Americans are called the Tequesta. The Tequesta depended on the rich food source of the sea to survive. They were not centered on farming, which requires huge amounts of time. So the Tequesta had more time than other natives for art and religion. Very complex social structures developed as a result. European explorers began arriving in the area in the early 1500s. They brought with them diseases like smallpox and measles. Over time, these diseases killed huge numbers of Florida's natives. Early explorers arrived in the area on ships. The reefs and rough waters made it difficult for ship captains. Biscayne's waters contain more than 50 shipwrecks. Scuba divers today can explore 6 of them.
Among them is the Earl King, which sank in 1891. It was built in 1865. Earl King was mostly used to transport goods, but it also carried wealthy passengers. In its first few years of service, it was used for trading between China and Australia. The ship hit Long Reef as it sailed to New Orleans from England in 1891. Its machinery and other parts were saved, but Earl King itself sank to the sea floor. Another shipwreck that scuba divers can explore is the Lugano. The British steamship sank in 1913. At the time of its sinking, it was the largest ship ever to wreck in the Florida Keys. It was traveling to Havana, Cuba, carrying goods and more than 100 passengers. Most of them were Spaniards immigrating to Cuba. High winds and heavy seas sent the ship far off course. A collision with Long Reef damaged the ship. Much of the cargo and all of the passengers were safely removed. The captain and crew remained aboard. Many people tried to remove the water from Lugano and repair it, but after several weeks, they abandoned their efforts. Today, the Lugano remains on Long Reef, almost 8 meters below water.
Many visitors to Biscayne National Park choose to explore underwater. Guides lead snorkeling and scuba diving trips. These give visitors the chance to get up close to the park's underwater wildlife as well as its shipwrecks. Visitors can also explore the park on a boat. Canoeing and kayaking are great ways to enjoy Biscayne's mangrove forests. Mangroves are little trees that grow in coastal waters. Many people take a kayak or canoe around the islands and lagoons. At Elliott Key, visitors can set up camp and sleep in the wild. At Boca Chica Key, visitors can explore a lighthouse. The lighthouse has become a symbol of Biscayne National Park. It was built in the 1930s by Mark Honeywell, one of the island's former owners. The deck at the top of the 20-meter-tall lighthouse provides beautiful views of the ocean and the nearby islands. The top of the lighthouse also offers views of Miami Beach's famous skyline. But visitors to Biscayne National Park probably are not there to see skyscrapers and city lights. The beauty in Biscayne is quiet waters, rustling mangroves, and, if you're lucky, a visit with a manatee. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.